Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. I'm telling you, man, summer's here, finally. My gosh. I was editing all these videos through winter, you know. I'm out here, you know, 45 degrees in the backyard recording these things all the way through winter. And I was just, and I would go back and I'd look at some of the ones in summertime because I have to, you know, review comments every once in a while. I'm like, what did I say? And I'll play it and I'm like, oh, it's 95 degrees out. And I'm thinking, damn. So now we're back. It's very good. Today we're going to talk about sort of a subject that we don't talk about much, if at all, which is a sort of calming your soul. You know, when you finish K through 12 school, especially if you go off to college as well, and you get done and you live a decade after all of your education, regardless of how high you go in the education. I think the higher that you go, the more that my point is going to be well taken. You realize that what you were taught to deal with life was negligible. You're simply not taught what you need to know to deal with life. You're not. You're not taught anything about the existential potential of the universe, about where we are, who we are. You're not taught how to communicate with individuals. You know, if you got some of this stuff, try to take inventory of where you got that information. Was it from a relative, a friend? Did you really have a really cool class in high school or middle school or college that got this stuff to you? And now if you're smart, you'll take a philosophy class and they're not talking about it, but as you study things, you'll start to have your mind blown because you're really getting into the subject matter and having your own thoughts, you know? Once you hear phrases like, I think, therefore I am, it starts to get you to think, what does that mean? That's a little esoteric, you know, circular logic issue. But this is about being calm. Now, how do you approach something like this, right? Well, the end goal would be if after you watch an hour of this particular show or listen to this particular show, you're more well-equipped to discern where you have control and where you don't have control to remain calm. And I mean that quite literally, just in terms of being calm. I'm talking about being with yourself, your family, and your work, and being calm. You know, you could throw your creator in there if you want. But when the stuff hits the fan, you're able to stay in control of yourself. Or if when you find yourself out of control, you're able to get yourself in control through some very specific exercises, right? Now, I'm going to talk about everything I could think of course, because I got to go an hour on this thing, but I have been known in most circles in my life for being extremely calm and cool. I've been around two people in my lifetime, especially that I've dated, that loved to argue. It was part of their being. And when you get out of that circle and you meet people that don't like to argue, you suddenly realize, geez, you know, these people are making me the very worst that I could have possibly been, because in those circumstances, I was arguing. I was arguing back, you know. And it just gets to a point where you need a change, right? So I'll make that make more sense here in a little bit. But I've always admired people, as I've said throughout the entire series, that were extremely calm, cool, relaxed, mega intelligent. And they were calm and they were cool from their knowledge of the world. But they were also calm and cool just about their demeanor, about how they, you know, they dressed like they had their brain in order. They spoke very calmly, you know, and some of these people, I don't know, there's just sort of like a gene. But I do believe it can be learned. I don't think all things can be learned, but I think most things can. And this is one of those situations where I believe that you can usurp this process, right? But now being calm isn't just being cool to people outside of your consciousness, right? We know that we have multiple characters playing this game. We have our multiple versions of ourselves. We have the external persona to the outside world, right? What everyone believes us to be. And then we have our internal character, which is sort of what Freud talks about, the character that sits on top of the kernel, that is the id, which is your subconscious child. And then there's a bunch of combinations thereof, right? Externally speaking, you have your external world with a loved one. There's a spouse, bubble, halo, where they get to know you better than most people on planet Earth. Then you have your parents and your extended family, which get to know you a little bit less. Then you have your children, and depending on your relationship with your child, they either get to know you or they don't get to know you. And then there's general public. And then there's your work. So each one of these categories of your exposure of your persona out to the outside world is where you're going to have to, is where, well, one, where you visibly recognize a different instance of your persona that has different rules. Some of you own businesses and you believe that if you're nice, then that starts to get to a point where no one will respect you. And a lot of that's true, unfortunately, right? So a lot of bosses are stoic and coarse, because if they ever show you kindness, and then, well, I should say, if they ever show kindness, some people will take advantage of that and try not to work and try to come in late and try to steal out of the cash box, you know. And so because of crappy people on this planet, they have to stay hard for the rest of us, right? But sometimes that's you, where you have to stay hard. But you know that that each one of these areas makes you a different person. It's almost as if you involuntarily and automatically go into a different mode of yourself as you travel in and out of these pockets, you know? Most of us who've had kids, you come home to your spouse, even if it's, well, whatever connection you have with somebody else that you're maybe living with, and you're in the bedroom and you have a whole separate voice, a whole separate agenda of what you're willing to talk about. And then the second you walk outside to the front room and go downstairs, you can feel depending on how old your children are, you're putting on a different, you know, cartoon character version of yourself to the, I need to give my teenager some, you know, wisdom today, or just be involved, right? So I make those distinctions because when we talk about being calm and addressing chaos and addressing situations, it's going to take different mechanisms. Now, within yourself, I think it's probably the truth that you have this self that is completely isolated. And I know that's what self means, but the second example would be if you believe in a creator or a higher being, whether it be the universe itself or a God that reaches out, touches Adam's hand, you have a different relationship, a different feeling of yourself when you start to open up in prayer or communication with a higher being. And you might argue that's not self, but I think it is, because once you start opening up to your creator, I think most of us subconsciously, if not consciously, understand that if there ever were a creator hovering in the sky, that you can't keep a secret from that being. So let's talk about calmness. Because without understanding what it is, we don't know what our goals are. What is calmness? If I said, go to calmness, and it's a place in the world, you'd have to know where it is and what it is and how you know you're there, right? I think the definition that is lost on calmness is one word, and that word is control. When you are calm, you are in control of yourself. When you are not calm, you're absolutely not in control of yourself. When you are calm, the left brain and right brain are functioning equally at the same time. Roughly speaking, meaning they have the same blood flow. When you're not calm, your right brain gets shut down. and your left brain takes over for survival sake. And honestly, thank God, because we'd probably be long gone as a species if that wasn't the case. So what is the opposite of calm, and how does it occur? Well, calmness can come in a bunch of different levels, right? Let me give you a couple examples that you've probably run into in your life. For any of you who have fallen for a false flag, you turn on the television and something horrific visibly happened on television. And regardless of the details of the particular one that you saw, whether or not you believed that someone was murdered or not, it's got you totally freaked out. And you lose your calmness. You're watching something horrific on television. You're in a public place. And somebody decides to have a fight. You're at a bar. You're at a sports stadium. And just that crazy electrifying energy. It's almost like static electricity coming out of a Tesla coil, reaching over the crowd, coming at you. The further you're away from the epicenter, the less you're going to feel the energy of the moment. But those are the drastic, heavy-duty ones that you know about. But from a technical sense in your mind, you have order becoming chaos. Order takes a few milliseconds to conceive of. It does. If I brought you into my house and I had a gigantic 10-foot by 10-foot table and I had arranged in some particular pattern M&Ms all over the top of this thing, all spaced out an inch apart, like an LED screen, and I said, look at that. And you could go, oh, wow. You know, after like 10 seconds or so, you're totally contemplating. So for a split second, that order is chaos. And then for however long it takes you to figure out what I did, it becomes order. And you feel calm again. But you also felt the excitement of the moment, right? But now I take you to a situation where I'm going to have something happen that's utterly chaotic. And it doesn't stop being chaotic. This is where your brain simply can't figure it out. And when your brain can't figure out something, the external patterns of the real world start becoming the internal patterns of the inside of your mind, right? Because just like a tracking software that you might have on a fighter plane, on a fighter jet, right? They're tracking all the bogeys. They're tracking all of the incoming artillery, missiles, whatever. Surface-to-air missiles, everything's being tracked constantly so that the pilot knows what's going on. When I take that and multiply it times 1,000 and put it in space, for God's sakes, right? Your brain will try to take a clump of cells, a clump of neurons, a clump of electricity in your brain and track every single thing that's going on. That's going to be a natural thing to gain order, to gain calmness. I'm going to remind you of something that you've heard several times in the real world because it helps people calm down. On the analogy of tracking a bunch of stuff, I need you to see the resolution of the information that's coming at your brain. And what does that mean? Okay. If I said, look at the dashboard of your car. Now, here's a magnifying glass. Now look at the texture of the dashboard of your car. And you get down there and you realize, oh my gosh, this thing actually has a texture. Even if it's made of plastic, they molded it to look like leather. And so there's this weird pattern. But looking at your dashboard from 3 feet away, it just looked like a curved piece of plastic. When you got really close, you started seeing all this detail. And once you take in those patterns, your brain wants to understand it. At least your left brain does. Because your left brain is trying to figure out if what you're looking at is a threat. It doesn't know that the dashboard with texture isn't a threat. And so it goes into like overanalyze mode, right? All right. Now you've heard it a million times. People say, oh, you know, from the 60,000 foot perspective, da 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 da. And they're talking about a particular subject. Because they're trying to get you to see the overview of the information. Now imagine you are some sort of logistics person for Disneyland, and they literally well, I guess I shouldn't say 60,000 feet for this particular analogy, but at some point they are showing you an overview presentation on the wall, and they show you a picture of Disneyland from, say, 1,000 feet up, maybe 5,000 feet up, almost a mile. And it's just sort of a little patch on the ground. And they're having a conversation about all the Disneylands that are, or Disney parks that are around the world, Disney World, whatever. And on this one slide, they've got every single park photograph from 5,000 feet up, and they just look like little patches here and there. And they're just talking about the strategic nature of managing these parks. And you feel comfortable looking at that. Then they flick the slide over and they start using more screen, you know, real estate inside your meeting room. These parks start getting zoomed up and zoomed up and zoomed up to the point where now you're in some, you know, VR dome, and you're right in the center of the dome, and these parks are projected on the wall, and you can start seeing all the little highways and little buildings and all the workings of each one of the parks. Now you're starting to get massively overwhelmed as this person talks about the logistics, because as they zoom up the images, they also start zooming in the subject matter. They're not talking about just moving, you know, ice cream in and out of the parks. They're talking about, I don't know, the staff that sweeps up the place 24/7. I know it's a very bizarre analogy, but if that were to be demonstrated to you in some fashion, you would get very quickly how the mind can get overwhelmed. And it requires an infrastructure of thought, of process, a pipeline, if you will, inside your mind to make sure that regardless of how chaotic the information comes in your mind, you have a mechanism of always pulling back and keeping yourself calm, right? Hence, in control. Now, there is that disposition, I believe, that some people simply have become addicted to the chemical patterns in their mind that have been fed from their youth based on chaotic patterns. And they're always going to be a person who is a destructive personality. They're going to be a person that is a shit starter, as they say, right? And then you're going to have someone who grew up in a household where things were calm. Their parents were calm. You'll find out that kids that were raised by older parents are more predisposed to being calm because their parents' frequencies are calm. The mother carried the child when she was calm, you know. My parents were extremely young, so I don't know how I ever got calm. I think maybe it's because I really idolized my grandparents, you know. And then again, these family friends who were so contrastly different than my own parents, you know. But now let's look at how we perceive the world, because how you perceive the world is going to determine whether or not you see Disneyland from 5,000 feet or 5 feet, right? You have a spectrum of emotion that you can have in this world, right? It's just think of a meter from left to right. And let's just say that we're pretty much in the center most of the time. But you have total chaotic crazy on the left, and then you have utter, you know, Buddhist monk om on the right, totally calm on the right. And we wiggle somewhere in between. You know, on good days, we go over to the calm side. Maybe on a crazy day, maybe it's our birthday and it's a surprise party, and we get over to the left of this range towards chaos. But the more I do these shows and the more I talk about it, the more I realize that we have a perceived, whether it's conscious or unconscious, we have a perceived spectrum of response to things. And it's when you don't know that that's the case, yet it is the case, that it is something that rules over you, you're all over the map, right? You're all over the map because you simply don't know. When you respond, you're just knee-jerky. Now, there's some cultures that teach etiquette, that teach calmness, that teach don't reply quickly, don't reply loudly. And within those cultures, Great Britain is a really good one. I think India is good that way. But when you have a pause between your reactions, you have a great reaction. But if you're American, or you're in a world where for whatever reason, you're modern like most folks, and it's just say what's on your mind because that's the way we roll these days, I want to suggest you start to pull back, make that meter in your mind, and then try to think about, I don't know, total up the last 5 days, the last 30 days, the last year, and just try to give yourself almost like a stock report on your emotional swings. Where are you in the spectrum of all these things? Are you a drama queen? A drama king? Are you a pillar? Do people come to you to calm down, but then when you hang up the phone, you turn into a crazy? You know, you're not going to be purely anything unless you're extremely lucky. You will waver from time to time. Things will rub you wrong, no matter how calm you are. Now, before I go any further, there's a phenomenon out there, which is tremendous, where, and this happens to me, when I'm around people that are very emotional and chaotic and seemingly in a dangerous state of mind, I go extremely stoic and calm and soothing. And I find that when the people I'm just talking to are very calm and relaxed, if I have something I need to say that's just been on my mind that's riling me up, I feel more comfortable bringing it out to people that are very calm. It's a weird contrasting thing. You know, the opposite seems to attract, right? And I've seen this in a bunch of different formats in my own life, personally. So what affects calmness? What are the obstacles that keep us from being calm? Because, you know, hey, theoretically, who doesn't want to be calm every once in a while? You know, you don't go to amusement park to be calm, right? But when you come home and you need to do work or you have to go to bed at night or traffic is tough, you know, someone is just rubbing you the wrong way, being selfish from your perspective. How do you stay calm in those situations? And why, in some cases, do we absolutely lose our cool and overreact? Because we all do it, man. We all do it. Well, let's look at what technical apparatus gives us the ability to be calm or chaotic or agitated, right? Well, on this show, we talk about the symbiotic relationship between your consciousness and your body. Your mind is the mezzanine sort of on loan memory from your consciousness, taking in information from this world through the mortal coil, but also bringing wisdom in from the back of the universe, combining to be a thought. Okay, so to be calm, we essentially have two different forces coming together, our consciousness and our body. And in the middle, you have the byproduct, which is the mind. Okay. Now, I'm going to assume, and I might be wrong, but I'm going to assume that our consciousness is sort of a pretty calm, cool cat, you know, and that it is our body that creates deviations that we do not enjoy, right? So that's essentially another way of saying that I think the universe is pretty calm, cool, and relaxed, and I think that it is us as the mortal coil, the inferior version of ourselves, which is nothing wrong with that, that makes us go one way or the other. All right. Now, I have dealt with folks in the last couple of years that completely solved the mystery for me in terms of panic attacks. And if you watched all the episodes, you will have heard this before. But since we're on the subject, here we go. Panicking is the antithesis of calm, right? Everyone knows that. It's the opposite. I have seen people who, when they ate a lot of sugar, lost their minds, you know? And it wasn't in a blatant way that they eat a candy bar and then they just go bonkers and we can have them committed. No, no, no. Much more subtle than that. They have a stream of thought that is extremely powerful, but arbitrary, meaning it has no specific thought attached to it. But it is extremely strong. And then all of their suspicions in life, if they have any at all, start to take on an incredible, exaggerated emotional swing. So imagine looking at some sort of, you know, oscillation pattern, little wiggling line like a Richter scale on an earthquake. And you look at it, and it looks like a straight line. But you know that, fractionally speaking, that needle's wiggling just a little bit, right? And then you amplify it times 10. And all of a sudden, you start to see little waves. And then you amplify it times 100, and you start seeing like crazy earthquakey waves, right? A lot of times when I modify the audio for this show, you can barely see the signal until I start doing amplifications, and you're like, oh my gosh, there it is right there. But now sugar in the human body, in a pure form, and oversupplied, and remember, everything you eat is either fat or sugar. Fats never become sugars, sugars never become fats. But carbohydrates are complex sugars. Your spaghettis, your breads, they all convert to a sugar. That's what fuels your electrical system in your body. If you are eating way too much sugar for your body size, you know, there's tiny people that could eat what would be served over the counter at a fast food restaurant, and they'll be on cloud nine of crazy, right? And then you have someone who's maybe 400 pounds, and they'll just sit down and simply consume three pies in a row, right? You can get there. You can get oversupplied with sugar. And once you do that, you have now converted a tremendous amount of food into energy. And you have essentially taken a drug that makes you go crazy, like a PCP or an angel dust sort of thing, or a meth. You're sort of in a clinically legal state of crazy. So I want to make sure that you understand that your diet is the first layer of defense when it comes to remaining calm. And nobody tells you that, right? I eat like a creature of habit. And so I decide on a few restaurants that I'm going to go to for a particular span of time. And then I routinely go there. I eat the same exact meal over and over and over again. And what that does is it helps me inform my body, okay, at 2 o'clock or 12 o'clock or whatever, I will be giving you this food and you can break it down. And so I build this biological cycle with my body such that it's there. It's ready to burn what I'm bringing in. I don't eat too much, right? I want to eat till I'm full and then I stop eating. It also makes sure I don't run out of all the food in the world where I don't get tired of all the food at once, right? Because I'll eat Mexican for a while, then I'll eat, fried chicken for a while or something, you know. So one of the counteracting forces for eating a lot of sugar and getting yourself upside down is exercise. Exercise sort of has a 100% guarantee to calm you down because you will have spent a tremendous amount of energy doing what you do. And it's just calming. Another little trick, which actually sadly might be related to the fluoride exposure to the epidermis, is taking showers. It tends to have two effects. One, it will stabilize your heat up a little higher, right? Most people don't take cold showers. And so you take a shower and it heats up your body, which will make you sleepy, right? It also, water has a frequency that's a lot lower than any agitated frequency. So a bath is amazing because the bath surrounds you with water. It's super low frequency and your body has no chance to do anything but adapt to the water's frequency around you. Jacuzzi, probably a lot different, but jacuzzis work on the principle of heat to calm you down. Plus, you know, it'll nail your body with a bunch of chaotic jets so that when you get out, the lack of the jets chaotically bombarding your body brings you to a state of calmness, right? Contrasting the moments of life is one of the techniques to appreciate order and chaos, right? Any of you had a massage and someone beat you up, you know, like they do the little karate chop things. They do it all over your body. And for some reason, getting hit like that feels amazing. But it even feels more amazing the second that they stop and your body gets that calm relaxation. You know, massages in general, I think, are good for anyone who's suffering from massive bouts of stress. You know, and it could be the tiniest shoulder rub, head rub, get your scalp worked on, get your ears rubbed, get your face massaged. You hold so much stress in your face and your scalp, it's crazy. The bottom of your feet, you know, go get a foot massage somewhere, right? Now, I talked about people that are have grown addicted to chemical patterns of chaos based on their upbringing. You may be one of these people. So let's address it very quickly. What do I mean by that? What I mean is, you may have had a fun, totally cool childhood where things were simply more chaotic, and that's what you like. It could be that it isn't a positive, it's a negative. Your parents argued, and they argued in front of you, which freaked you out. It could be your brothers and sisters argued with you or each other, or you just simply lived in a rougher neighborhood and you saw a lot of chaos that was terrifying. And suddenly now you're like that. And you might go, why the hell am I like that? I know consciously that's not what I want to be a part of, right? And the answer is the following, and it's very, very simple, but never taught. It's not even taught in college until I show up. Let's say that you keep watching a pattern of chaos around you, your family, your friends, your neighborhood, whatever, and it's not pleasant. It is not pleasant. There are two chemicals in your brain that will react to these situations. You have adrenaline and your dopamine, right? Adrenaline is typically what fires when you feel like you're in danger. It gives you numbness. It gives you a very linear left brain experience. It also, in trying to mute pain in your body, because the adrenaline's there, so when you get your ass kicked and you're being eaten by an animal, you actually don't feel it as much as you would if you were calm. And that gives you a chance of winning, right? So let's say you're constantly watching all this chaos as a child, perhaps even before you can remember it. And all of a sudden now, you are more prone to being like that, but you don't understand why. And the reason is this. When you are observing this stuff and experiencing this stuff as a kid, you are having all of these chemicals dumped into your brain to simply deal with what you couldn't understand. When any chemical pattern fires in your brain, you have a very high likelihood of becoming chemically addicted to that situation. Now remember, if you were to be terrified as a child and a bunch of adrenaline drops in your system and then the adrenaline escapes, right? You go for that post-adrenaline high, you are going to be in a situation where you are high as a child. So you witness horrific things and then you're high. You witness horrific things and then you're high. It's a Pavlovian training thing, right? Ring the bell, feed the dogs, ring the bell, feed the dogs. You know, does the name Pavlov ring a bell? So the idea is this could be you. And this could be one of the reasons why becoming calm is extremely difficult for you. So you have to train yourself in the opposite direction. And this is going to be complex. And there's probably nothing I can say specifically in this particular video to give you exactly what you need. But it would have to be something like this. Recreate a situation or find a place in the universe where you can recreate a situation that is the image of yourself and the image of control that you want. And then figure out a way to live it and celebrate its positivity in your life, right? Now, I will say to you this much. If you can exacerbate the chemical structures in your brain while experiencing this, meaning it's amazing. And it could be, I'll just give you a really stupid analogy so that you can see what I'm saying. Okay. Now, if I said, let's go to Disneyland and I'm going to put you on Space Mountain and you dig roller coasters and it's super positive experience, the line's even fun to be in, and we get done and it's a 60-second ride and your brain's just like, oh my God, and we just keep riding this thing four or five times. I am getting a bunch of chemicals to dump in your brain during this experience from the beginning, the middle, you know, from anticipation of the ride, especially after you've ridden it once, to the ride itself, which has just got so much chaos going on in the room that it'll take you 50 times to start predicting what's going to happen. And then this post adrenaline drop where you're super duper happy, right? Now, You know, there's chaos negative and there's chaos positive. And if you play Dungeons and Dragons, there's chaos neutral too. You could have grown up addicted to chaos negative, which is why you're negative. I could take you on that ride and maybe get you addicted to chaos positive, right? So if you can do this by reading a book, watching a movie, being with individuals where you seriously want a physical calmness, you don't just want a mental calmness, you want a physical calmness, you need to get something that gives you a big pop in the brain so that you can erase your childhood. That's a crude example, but I think it's going to be very important and useful to you as you need to, as you find yourself in a need to reprogram yourself. Now let's jump into the world of emotion as it relates to calmness. I have a lot of European friends, and I have a lot of friends that are from Europe but are born in America. But boy, do they carry their genetic badge with them, because they were raised with families that were not first generation. They were actually from the homeland. And this is, for me, a very endearing, fun thing to say. The empathy and emotion of Europe in a lot of areas over there is incredible. And the two folks, the two areas that I have had the most exposure to where I see this occurring are my German friends and my Italian friends. Now, I'm not sure there's hearts bigger than Italian hearts, right? Their hearts are so massive, right? And by saying that, I mean their empathy is so unbelievably natural and focused and just, you know, they feel reality on a massive level. And again, I haven't been to all locations, but you have some Spanish friends that are very similar to that, right? But the reason why I mention this is that when you're empathetic, and empathy means you can feel what someone else feels. You're not just feeling sorry for someone. That's between you and yourself. But being empathetic means that you can look at a homeless person and say, damn, I bet they are thinking this. A lot of people have pets are extremely empathetic because they look at a pet's little puppy dog eyes and the vet's playing you like a harp, right? When you are empathetic, you are at a disadvantage for calmness because you are going to feel an amazing emotional swing. And honestly, we're trying to plant the seeds of empathy into your mind and make sure that you do empathetically see the world, because empathy, with the proliferation of electronic devices and short attention spans, it would seem as if empathy is a long wave of electricity, and with a short attention span, it's like the youth of this world are constantly swinging at the consciousness of their own mind with a butcher knife, and they take waves and they chop them into little tiny chiclet pieces, right? And the thing is with you need to stop doing that, which just means have an attention span. Let something, you know, let the string on the violin play, right? You can't hear a violin if you only played a little, you know, half second of it. It would seem like a synthesizer, right? It'd be hard and sharp, but if you were to let it grow and play, you would hear it, right? So when you're empathetic, you're at a disadvantage. So how do you wrangle that? Here's the way I think you can do it, because I've seen people do it this way. The perception of how you play a role in the world, I think, governs greatly how you respond to it. And that might sound extremely, extremely basic, but let's put it to you this way. Let's say that you're from a very emotional family, and you just see people's emotions. It's just a gift. It's genetically like the Force, right? Which is sort of what I think about Italians. Their empathy is like George Lucas's Force. They just see it. You know, they just see people's hearts. They see suffering. Now, if I took one of my buddies who's Italian and I say, okay, you've got this amazing ability and to see people's emotions, and you get caught up a lot in people suffering, and you also feel your own suffering 10x of what most of us feel, right? And so you find yourself angry, because when somebody disrespects you, especially, the unit of measure I feel it on is one unit, and what my Italian buddy sees it on is 10 times, 100 times more disrespect, because he might look into the mind of the person disrespecting him and see way more sort of disrespect connects, evilness, whatever. And maybe it's all made up in their brain, but maybe it's not. But now, if I say, you're just a pawn in life, and you're having all these empathetic emotions, and so you feel like you have no control over your life, because that's how you perceive it, you're a guard to the king. You're a guard to the chief. You're told what to do. And if someone's disrespecting, like you go up to do guard duty. Here's a good analogy for you. You go up to do guard duty and the guy next to you always just busts your chops and says something disrespectful about your family or about you or whatever. Says you couldn't handle battle if it happened. You know, you'll be the first guard down if there's anything goes on at the gate. Obviously something they can't possibly confirm. Now, if I said, you are a soldier and you have to tolerate that, it might be really frustrating. But if I said, you know what? Regardless of where you are in life, you're the heir to the throne. You're the heir to the throne. You are going to be chief. You're going to be king. You are going to be a wonderful leader for all of us within this particular area, which could be your circle of life. And even though you're 28, 32, 19, whatever, and you're not there yet, you are pining for the greatness that really calls to your genetic capabilities, your own accomplishments. And so now when someone disrespects you at those peon levels, because these people make themselves peons, right? I'm not trying to classify any group of people. But the people that are still stuck in this bizarre selfish mode that is disrespecting people, just as an example, you will sit there with your spear, looking out into the countryside, doing your job, and you just think to yourself, well, you know, I'm made for bigger and better things. Or when I leave this post, I go back to my home and I am that chief. You know, let's say you're 65 hearing this and you're like, oh, it doesn't make any sense to me because I'm not going to ascend beyond this point. I'm actually in the relaxation mode of life, which means you're probably pretty calm anyway. But the idea is to perceive yourself further out from the very specifics of any particular moment. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule, of course. But I know a lot of you are thinking, when is he going to talk about meditation? The reason why I spend 50 minutes on the other stuff is because no one talks about the other stuff, really. And meditation is all that you can find online when you talk about being calm. And yes, there are Chinese herbs you can take, too, that make you calm. But when it comes to meditation, and I've talked about this a couple times on a couple shows, but let's get into it real quickly here. It's not something that people perceive themselves doing, especially in Western societies, on average, right? What I have seen is that people actually do it immediately start to get the value of it. But I will say that in my experience personally, sitting and meditating, like say, let's say you read a few paragraphs in a book or you read a whole book on it or watched a video in meditation. They're giving you all these ideas about how to meditate. I will tell you that if the methodology in America is to learn a bunch of stuff and then go off and meditate by yourself, whether it be a yoga mat, lighting candles, whatever, that usually doesn't take, because it does have to do with your sugar levels at the time that you try to meditate. So if you are really processing a lot of energy, it's just not going to happen unless you're a phenomenal person. Some people are genetically predisposed to consume their energy quickly, and so they're always in a calm state, and sometimes we call those people lazy. My advice to you is, if you are unable to meditate, which would probably be the reason why you're watching this, get audio recordings with guides in them, Hindu gurus inside the tapes, where they actually talk you through various meditative thought processes. The other huge one to think about or to consider when you're listening to these is you'll have gurus that have you hum the om, and they'll change frequencies. And what they are doing is they're trying to resonate in your head your glandular systems. Your pineal gland is one of the most common ones, right? Definitely do the chant, because you will, if like I'm in my 40s, right? I have done these chants recently and thought to myself, wow, when I was a little kid, I used to do weird sounds when I was a child, just hum. And I would feel it resonate into the skull of my brain. And there was something amazing happening. You know, nothing like I didn't travel to another universe or something. But I remember thinking, wow, this feels really interesting on my mind. By humming a certain way, doing a nasal hum, that sort of thing. And I think that was because I was tapping into the cellular tissue inside my head. Now, how would you talk to your pineal gland? If I say pinch your butt cheeks, you could do it. But if I said pinch your pineal gland right now, you can't do it. There's no direct connection to the pineal gland, at least for people like me. And so the om technique and the humming and the meditating is a way that you can just send a telegram straight inside your head and start to get the thing going. Now you have glands all down your spine, right? It's your chakra, your seven hemispheres of enlightenment, right? There is an om chant and a frequency for every one of your glands. You can do these and learn these yourself, which for Americans, we're going to have to play a recording and then do our best to emulate the frequency. But there are also now albums that you can play, that you can buy off iTunes, which are like, if you look up meditation frequency, even just FREQ, you get these albums. And I used one of them on Mandela Effect Part 2 from Series 1. It is one of the meditative albums. And what they end up doing is they play a frequency underneath synthesized music, which is sort of in the key of the tone. And so in the end, you're getting healing, you're getting calmness, you're getting creativity, peace of mind, that sort of thing. I will say that what's interesting about these religions of meditation is when you look at it from a Western perspective without any education and without the maturity to really analyze it, it is very common for us to minimize their religion and their methodologies, okay, and saying, well, they're just primitive people that believe in primitive things, yada, yada. All right. Then you grow up and you meet some of these people and you realize, wow, they're extremely intelligent. They're extremely sentient, 100 times more a Western citizen, because they haven't had their minds beaten down by the modern culture, right? They're not messing around. I don't know if Shiva's real or something like that, but they know the human body. And remember, the Egyptians were massively into all this. They pioneered it. Like I've said, I think in my ancient Egyptian episode, the busts and sculptures of the Egyptian people, being very dark-bodied people, but almost, well, you know, again, when you go to King Tut's bust, you have a more African-looking face, and then when you start moving up to Nefertiti, you have more of a Caucasian-looking bust, which I'm not sure that we can trust, you know, virtually any of that stuff, but there seems to be a link between India and Egypt for me in terms of the body colors and their designs, just from a face value. But then when you get into the fact that the temples of Egypt were built with chakras, chakra rooms, and then you look at the fact that the Hindus are the most advanced chakra culture, it starts to make sense. You know, and of course the Chinese have the qi. And the Chinese figured out the ear and the foot on an amazing level, right? And acupuncture and stuff. But they are all amazing avenues to go down if you're looking for peace in your life. So let's review, because I just threw a tremendous amount of stuff at you. Calmness is control. when you are in a chaotic moment in your life, there's a few things to remember. You need to decide what role you play in your own life. Are you a soldier that gets all bent out of shape because the guy starts hazing you at the door when you're, you know, doing your job? Or are you a chieftain? Are you a king, a queen? Are you in command of your life in a way that, you know, if you walked up to, if you're, say, 30, and you walk up to a 12-year-old, and the 12-year-old starts to try and insult you, you sort of smile and you go, eh, nice try, kid. And even if they hit you in areas that you know, you're fat, you're ugly, and you think you might be fat or not that attractive, it's still coming out of a 12-year-old's mouth. And so you realize, you know, he or she's a little punk, whatever, and you move on with life. So when adults do it to you, or your kids do it to you, or any of that kind of stuff, you need to see yourself in a much bigger role in life. See yourself as an elder to your own existence. If you are very susceptible to emotions because you're extremely empathetic, which means, I should have said, if you're extremely empathetic, it means you're usually very into your own emotions as well. It doesn't always go the other way, right? Your social justice warriors of the world, they only, you know, get into their own emotions and not into yours. But if you're empathetic, you typically have a master's degree in emotions. If you are with someone who loves you, but you routinely think that they do things against you, it might be a good exercise to understand that they may not know they're doing it to you. Now, if someone is intentionally doing something to you and causing you to be chaotic, you might have to bite the bullet and make a change, no matter how tough that is. Because, hey, I don't know how many lives you get as this particular person that you are, but even if there's reincarnation, I think that we get one as each one of these individuals, right? Watch your diet. Your diet's going to control a lot of things in your life. It's going to control what shape you actually turn into. It's also going to control how much your brain can think based on a certain meal of a day. Meditation could be huge for you. Meditating doesn't have to be a Hindu carpet and a chakra chant. Meditation could simply be going down to the local beach, going down to the local lake, going anywhere that's peaceful. Could be going to a cemetery. It's just utterly peaceful. Realize that you might have gained an addiction to chaos as a young person, and you're going to have to retrain your brain to being addicted to calmness and happiness. Could be chaos happiness. I think you feel me. I'm not going to make this a big, long exit today. MKUltraRadio.com for all the feeds, audio, video, Facebook, etc. You know, the goal of this show is to make sure that you guys at least have the thread of the sweater pulled out a little bit when it comes to enjoying life, because we're in this thing together. If we can ever revolt against the bankers and their corrupt politicians and military and corporate people, we need to know how to run the world. And we need to have a sensibility in our minds about how to do it. And we need to have, I think, darkness and evil stick out like a sore thumb. And the only way we're going to do that is to make sure that our personal lives are in check. I know you feel me. As always, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.